The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my associate Dan DeBose, I believe, is already on the line. Dan, are you there?
Yeah, good morning, Nathan.
Good morning. I guess you've had your coffee or you're getting it now, huh?
It's early here. Yeah, I'm getting it.
Yeah, there you go. I wanted to complete the disclaimer that you heard just a part of there at the top to remind you that just because we talk about certain tax strategies or investment strategies and maybe some private real estate partnership opportunities today, which I think we'll get to all the above, that you shouldn't just run out and try to implement what you're hearing. You should always check with your current advisors. Hopefully they understand the topics. We CPAs vary a good bit about our knowledge base and what we're used to seeing and working with, et cetera. And you really need to consider your specific facts and circumstances before you rush in and invest in real estate private partnerships, for instance, which is a big topic for us, or assorted tax strategies that might or might not prove to be beneficial for you. Dan, before we get started, anything in the news this week that we need to unravel for our listeners?
Yeah, there's a possibility of another 50 basis point increase in the interest rate.
Wonderful.
That's a big deal right now. Getting a lot of talk.
Well, and of course, I think I can't remember if it was you. Someone I was talking to in my world this past week indicated that they actually saw a syndicator that was using, they were buyers. That's what it was, buyers that were seeking a 7.0 cap rate before they would invest. That's kind of crossing a threshold for us, right, compared to what we may have seen.
We have seen some of that, and it's that's kind of scary, is it not?
Well, I don't know, scary or a great opportunity,
reasonable,
depending on which side of that ledger you're on. If you're the seller, I believe it's a little bit daunting, but, as a buyer, I believe you'll find some deals that give you that, right? I mean, the market's moving real time in that direction, certainly. And I think it's pretty remarkable that the speed is what seems to be a little bit unusual. I mean, it's been a while since we've had this type of run-up in rates. And whether you're looking at some rates are going down, right? The cash-on-cash returns are going down a bit. Equity multiples are getting softer. The exit cap rates, you really got to be careful about, because I see a lot of transactions that are projecting the same cap rate or thereabouts as what the project's being acquired for. And I don't know about you, Dan, but I don't think on a 3 to 5 year time horizon you can make that assumption, especially when you're still seeing the Fed do what they're doing. So I guess
think certainly on a 3 year you probably shouldn't be looking at that same rate. Maybe 5 years,
maybe. It's just it doesn't seem like the rates come down nearly as fast as they make their way up, right?
Exactly.
And the problem is you get locked in to debt structures today that in a way dictate tomorrow, right? In a big way. So You know, you probably
won't. You might be happy to get locked into one nowadays, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, on the one, it's a blessing and a curse, right?
Yep.
So, you know, the LTVs are also being ratcheted down. It seems like 50 to 60% is becoming the norm instead of, you know, 70 to 80 as in past years, right?
Certainly
big difference.
It's getting higher.
Yeah, that's a big
higher
difference.
Higher down payment.
Big difference when it comes to the money that'll come out. Let's see. I was trying to think if there was... I don't think I've picked up any articles this week about major tax issues other than, I guess, the IRS is warning that refunds may be less for the average filer. And I don't quite understand the logic. You know, the fact that people don't have as big an overpayment to me is a positive thing. But, of course, the IRS tends to embellished just like some of our clients do, which, you know, is where they think that, you know, they're doing good because they're getting a big refund back. And as you
and
I...
in recent years, been getting refunds because the government's been throwing away money like that, you know, just giving out handouts, you know, during that COVID thing. People didn't pay anything in, but they still get a bunch of money back. That just, you know, you get might get used to that. I've had... some clients complain, say, well, my refund wasn't as big as been in the past. Well, that's good.
That's good planning. That's good planning. Why do we want to give the government an interest-free loan again? I'm always struggling to figure that one out. But anyway, I want to save time for late in the show, Dan, to talk about at least, well, probably we're only going to have time to talk about one of the current real estate private partnership opportunities that we've had clients ask us to review. But in the meantime, let's talk about some year-end tax planning for the, I guess, the near mass affluent or the mass affluent. We're talking about incomes of $100,000 up to $1 million. And let's take a look at one of the annual checklists that we're going to look at or have been looking at for more than a few years. Always a couple of new items on there. But one thing that's at the top of that list is the tax bracket management that we find ourselves in, because, you know, there is the ability of many of our clients to where they can time the recognition, whether it's on the income side or on the expenditure side. And I know I've got several clients right now that we're trying to decide how we best offset some gains that they've been able to harvest or to otherwise realize here in the current year. And as we come up to year end, we're looking at, well, do we simply go out and invest in another real estate partnership that still has the benefit of cost segregation and bonus depreciation, at least for one more year for 2022, we get 100% of that allowance. Starts to phase out next year, correct, Dan?
Yes, it does. Phasing out, it'll be gone by, what, 25, I believe.
Well, let's see, 23, 24, 25, 26, I think 27. Isn't it 20% a year, or is there a 40%
drop?
Okay, 20%. So it's 20% a year, so still pretty healthy, and who knows, Congress may come to their senses and help extend that. I don't know that the president would sign it. It's hard to predict what the president will do or not do these days. I guess on the tax front, even more so, right? And the good news is we've got – well, I say the good news is the good news should be that we have a Republican House, and yet that
– After January now.
Well, I'm sorry, say that again.
After January.
Well, that's true. And you know, as we speak, the House is trying to ram a historical spending bill through. Historical, I don't think, well, I don't know. The amount may be historical, but it's historical because lame duck sessions of Congress have never done what they're trying to do. And unfortunately, they've already got the Senate, you know, Senator McConnell's giving them a wink and a nod, actually more than that, to let them know that, you know, the Senate would likely pass that huge spending bill. And of course, you know, the Democrats are trying to attract the Republican vote by giving the military more money, which, you know, nobody on the Republican side wants to be seen as critical of that. But when you look at the it appears to be a near $1 trillion bump in the deficit off of this legislation. It's just more insanity, and it's more reason, if you haven't gotten your money transitioned or started transitioning it over to the Roth, whether it's IRA or 401, we like the latter. It's just another nail in the coffin of higher or lower interest rates. You know, we've got historically the lowest tax brackets in most of our lifetimes. And so now's the time. If you have pre-tax money sitting in IRAs or 401s, now's the time to start the conversion process so you can optimize and get your funds over to Roth. Why do we like Roth? Because typically it's tax-free earnings on those funds, which, while it may not mean much to you now, as you get to retirement, it's going to mean a lot. And, you know, there's multiple fronts that it matters. It's not just income tax. I mean, zero taxes on your Roth funds, you know, as they're invested in real estate or other investments is nice, but how about avoiding tax on your Social Security? Because the Roth distributions don't count as part of those provisional tax brackets that we look at to determine how much of our Social Security up to the 85% level becomes taxable. And it's not just Social Security. You've got the impact on Medicare, the IRMA cost of, you know, how much you're going to pay for part of your Medicare coverage. And again, Roths do not get considered as part of that calculation. So in any event, timing and bracket management, a big deal as we get here towards year end. Do we accelerate a bonus? Do we defer a bonus if we have that chance? Some employees do not. And then also, how do we time the expenses that we might have the option of prepaying? And again, if we can prepay something and get the benefit against a high amount of income, that's something we want to consider. Versus if your income is down this year, we would probably elect to defer and pay those expenses next year. What about, well, I'm going to let you tell me, Dan, what other income items might you be looking at that you could accelerate or defer?
Property taxes are really out of the equation because you're limited to $10,000 on all your state-related taxes, that are real estate, income tax, property tax,
okay,
tax,
and you're jumping in. Yeah, you're jumping into the itemized deduction timing, and that's good. That's the next category that we look at. So you mentioned the property tax rules now kind of limit us on how much we can deduct. What about charitable contributions, Dan? Is that an area that you might
see? You double up on them. You might be able to double up and get you a write off that this year that you won't have next year. Just depends on your income. And if you move income to this year, you might want to move expenses to this year.
Right, and define a double up so people listening will understand what you're referring to.
Pay 2 years of tax, what you anticipate paying in your charitable deductions this year and next year, put them all into 1 year. And one of the other things that we've talked about before, Nathan, is qualified distributions from an IRA that count toward your required minimum distribution that you can give direct
right
to a charity from your IRA and get no income recognition. You do not get the tax deduction directly from your itemized deductions, but neither do you have it recognized as income, which is the more valuable thing for those that are drawing Social Security as well, because it won't affect your Social Security taxability as well.
Yeah, good point. Now, let's go, because this double up term that you used, it's important that people understand we're not just talking about, well, gee, it'd be nice just to save having to write a check next year. Let's write a check twice as big this year. But why do we do that, Dan? What happens if we don't pay any? Let's just say we decide we're not paying any charitable contributions this year. We have no medical costs, or we're pushing everything into next year. How does that affect our taxable income? Let's talk about that.
We have a rather large standard deduction that is allowed all individuals or married couples. That's, you know, right now the married couple is 25 and a half. I don't remember exact
it's
numbers.
2022's amount is $25,900 unless you're at least 65, right? You're older or blind. And then you get an additional $1,400, $1,750 if you're single or head of household. So if you're both 65 and blind, the additional standard deduction amount's doubled. I guess it's $1,400 per person. So bottom line is, if you do nothing, you're going to be handed, let's just call it $26,000. Right? Versus if you pay 2 years of charitable contributions, and there are some limitations that we're subject to depending on the type of organization you're contributing to, but you could easily get up over the $25,000 or $26,000 mark and thereby get additional deductions. And then next year, maybe you take the standard. So by doubling up, as Dan says, from year to year, that's how a lot of our clients are able to maximize their reduction in taxable income. And again, taxable income is you know, a landing spot that's after you've figured out your provisional income that affects Social Security. But generally speaking, you know, taxable income is going to directly affect the amount of tax. Social Security is one of the components. You might have some other losses that, however, that would also impact that provisional bracket calculation.
You know, many of our taxpayers, too, have some tax-exempt income. You mentioned that modified adjusted gross income a while ago about getting your Social Security tax. We got to remember that that income from your tax-exempt interest is added back to get modified adjusted income to get Social Security taxable. It's really, we think most of the time it's non-taxable, but yes, it is. If you've got a Social Security that's being kicked in because of it, some of it will be taxed anyway. It's really kind of a shameful thing, in my opinion, from the tax code that you know, we promote it quite a bit, and we do, you know, we do have lots with tax-exempt income, and it's a great planning technique for many people, but you might get caught getting some of it taxed if you've got that Social Security with a big RMD or a big tax-exempt income, tax-exempt interest income. So,
right. And speaking of RMDs, you know, again, we talk about Roth conversions, seems like every show, and there's a reason. Here's another front where the Roth funds that do not impact you as dramatically as obviously the pre-tax. Do people that have Roths have to take RMDs, Dan?
No.
At least Roth IRAs, I guess.
The Roth IRA, no.
Correct. Roth 401s, we do once you've actually retired, which may not happen. You may elect to keep your side gig or your self-employment income that we need to qualify for a 401 trust alive indefinitely and avoid having to take the RMDs. Of course, the RMD on a Roth results in how much tax, Dan, just to be clear?
Are you asking a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know it was rhetorical. But yes, how much tax do we get to pay on Roth RMDs? 401?
Zero.
There you go. Still zero, but it starts to minimize the ability to you know, build up more income on a tax-free basis, which by that point, most of our clients are not too concerned about. Let's talk about, from a deduction standpoint, some of the other things that we might elect to fund retirement planning. You know, I suspect a lot of people are looking at whether to fund their IRAs this year or do that by April. Same with funding the 401ks. How long can we push back funding the 401, Dan, for our 401 trust clients?
Till your final tax return is, or till your tax return is finally prepared, that's as late as October the 15th, we recommend most of the time.
Well, that's true, unless it's an S-Corp and then or an LLC, and then it's September 15th, unless it's an LLC that's disregarded, so it becomes part of your individual tax return. So, you know, there's, you know, strategies involving cash flow that, you know, since you know you're going to be able to fund your retirement into next year, maybe you spend the money on other things such as education planning, timing our tuition payments. We could look if we have clients that are in executive, non-qualified type retirement plans, the ability to fund some of those vehicles. You mentioned charitable contribution earlier. We might consider donating appreciated assets to avoid or reduce the gains. Most of these things have a 12/31 deadline, and we didn't really get much into the Schedule A there, but the medical expense planning, I mean, we're coming up on, you know, year change in terms of when you, you know, can still claim a medical expense here at 12/31, and then you've got to think about just life itself. You know, there's family changes. You know, I had several clients this week connect with me about the fact that they're no longer able to keep their young adult children on their health care. So they're trying to figure out how that will impact their tax return, and I guess not just the tax return, the cash flow for the family unit, right? People may be looking at moving. Maybe you're moving out of a high tax state to a low or no tax state or vice versa, and you're trying to figure out how that will affect you. And then how about things that are expiring? We already touched on the bonus depreciation. Let's talk about things that are expiring in 2022. Without going into details, Dan, one thing on this list would be coronavirus-related relief. The 100% deduction schedule for business meals, and that's, you know, the coronavirus-related relief I'm putting under the category of business meals, where we were given the chance to claim some items that heretofore had been removed from
our if it was bought at a restaurant.
Right, correct. And it goes back to the 50% of the expenses that are deductible. So back to normal, I guess you might say. What about, we mentioned bonus depreciation. The Tax Cut Jobs Act provided for the 100% bonus depreciation, and that was on secondhand property as well. That was the huge difference between the way the bonus depreciation previously got applied, right? Used to it had to be new construction.
Yes.
Right? So,
and any new item.
You're right. So, in any event, let's see, let me make sure. Okay, it's scheduled to phase out in 20% intervals from 2023 to 2026. So, 2022 is the last year at 100%, 2023 will be at the 80, and then 24 at 60, and by 27, as we already indicated, it goes down to zero. Let's take a look at the Inflation Reduction Act, Dan, and what significance that has as we come up to, next year and beyond. What do you think some of the most significant provisions will be for what that act funds or takes away?
Well, I'm going to say in a word, nothing.
Well, you might be wrong. I hope you're right. But the 87,000 new IRS agents, or I say new, some are replacements. And then there's
there was talk about it. I read an article where they're saying that I can't remember if it was 25 or 50,000. It was a huge number of IRS employees are leaving within that time frame that they're trying to hire those new 87. Now, I don't know. That means they're going to have to hire 137,000.
Well, I think the takeaway, and I've seen several articles address that, is that it's going to take a lot more than 87 ultimately to replace and to expand the new areas that they're talking about. But
and where are they going to find these people?
Well, good point. And, you know, I don't know. I know they're already starting, and I guess we'll watch closely to see how fast that can happen. And, of course,
well,
I don't
– 8 million past due, I guess I should say, way behind on processing within the IRS.
Yeah.
8 million tax returns. That's huge. That's just
huge. It's very difficult to work with the IRS now on behalf of clients because the phone still doesn't get answered any earlier. And I know I've seen some responses within 4 months instead of 6 months, but it's still very frustrating. And, you know, their collection apparatus keeps moving along in real time, relatively speaking, to their addressing abatement requests and other correspondence where they've asked for information. And so, you know, it's frustrating when you make a request and you can't get an answer. And then you can't, when you call in after holding for 15 to 30 minutes, you're told, well, all of our agents are busy. Try back tomorrow. I mean, literally, right?
Yeah, I saw one article where they were real proud of the fact they answered 20% of the calls.
Yeah, so, you know, it's for those of you that do not have an account with the IRS, go to irs.gov and create an account so that you have a way to get your answer to many of the issues you might otherwise have to call about. And I just can't emphasize enough the importance these days, given what we've just discussed, to have that other opportunity to reach inside their system to check the status of things that, you know, you may be checking your refund status, you may be looking for the current year identity or IP PIN code. A lot of things get delivered electronically that you otherwise have to wait to get through the mail. And then the other problem is you may find that they're using an address from 7, 8, 9 years ago, right? That's really frustrating. When here you filed tax returns using a correct address, you get a notice about a return that has the correct address. And in the meantime, they've assigned you an identity, an IP PIN, and they send the letter to the old address. That's part of the problem. That's why some people have the identity theft problem, right? So anyway, hey, let's take a break, Dan. We're at the halfway point. I'm here with Dan DuBose talking about year-end tax planning. We're going to save a little bit of time to talk about a syndication offering currently. But we'll be right back in a few minutes with more of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at beaplanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to the second half of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I'm here speaking with Dan DuBose on the line, my associate that does a lot of our tax compliance, tax preparation, and helps me out with planning as well. Dan, I want to be pretty brief on the Investment Reduction Act, otherwise known as IRA, very clever. I would say for the Biden administration, although it's anything but an inflation reduction as we see it. We've seen proposals that while we had about a 2-week reprieve from additional spending, it didn't take long. Although it appears the student loan forgiveness, the $1 trillion student loan forgiveness plan has hit some bumps in the road that I'm not convinced will totally derail it. I think there will be an attempt, maybe even here before year end, to legislate, although let's hope we have some resolve on the right to not allow that plan to proceed. It's incredibly expensive. It has zero participation of the element that should be responsible for this debt. Who might that be, Dan? Who's the player that's not participating at all in the forgiveness?
Ones that paid their way?
Well, that too. That would be a big chunk. But how about the universities that benefited? All the new buildings, all the facilities, the additional employees they hired off of the funds that came in from student loans that now the general public is being asked effectively to repay. And I just think, you know, I'm all for giving student loan debt, but how about we share it between the people that actually got the benefit of those extra dollars, right? But in any event, enough about additional deficit increases. I guess if we were concerned about that, we wouldn't be seeing a Congress that's trying to jam $5.1 trillion in additional spending through the current year, even against tax collections of maybe $4 trillion. So, again, there's that trillion-dollar increase I mentioned earlier. But as far as some of the provisions that are in the IRA of 2022, energy played a pretty big role or segment in that bill. And I will just give you a few of them. Most of the incentives are for industry. However, there's some that individuals, taxpayers, and business owners might like. For homeowners, there's improvements to the incentives to improve energy efficiency and generate clean energy. Electric vehicles, the per manufacturer limit is removed, but adds a MSRP, I guess, total limit to the credit that can be generated. The credits made available at the point of sale, that's nice, and a $4,000 credit for used EVs or electric vehicles has been added. There are also changes to the incentives for charging equipment, which I've lost track of how far behind or if we've closed the gap on what's needed. Seems like there are more and more charging stations around. I know the hotel that I'm staying at here in Houston has, I don't know, 5 or 6 EV stations that maybe get used once or twice a week, it appears. And I guess those spots have become fair game for my Toyota Tundra because I've been at the hotel now long enough to where they give me some consideration. But My Tundra is anything but a energy-efficient vehicle. In fact, I have long maintained that it's really not getting me 13 miles to the gallon. Since I'm overseas every other month at least, it's 26 miles to the gallon, right? That's how I look at it. So that's how I justify that 5.7 V8. But anyway, for business owners, the credit for your clean energy producing property is significantly improved by extending it through year 2032. They expanded the eligible technologies that we can use and even added some bonus credits for certain situations. It also includes a credit for commercial clean vehicles that you might use in trade or business activity. Heavy vehicles, and I've forgotten how that's defined, Dan. Is that over 6,500 pounds, maybe?
6,000.
Oh, 6,000, okay.
Gross vehicle weight.
Yeah, well, those vehicles are eligible for up to a $40,000 credit. And there also is an important change where some of these credits allow taxpayers to receive a direct benefit in lieu of claiming certain credits and allow the transfer of certain credits to other taxpayers. So I'm not sure. I haven't seen the regs on those provisions, but they're being touted as innovative and positive for the taxpayer. I guess that'll remain to be seen. Let's talk briefly about it's pending legislation, hadn't passed yet, but it's called Secure 2.0. As a colloquial term, it's the EARN Act, and I've forgotten exactly what that acronym stands for, but it's retirement plans, and it is bipartisan, so I think it's likely you're going to see this eventually pass. But in any event, the things that are being added are innovative if you're perhaps unable to generate retirement savings on your own. There's going to be more employer mandates that the employer automatically add you to a plan with some sort of contribution or give you the option, as an example, of paying student loan debt and having that count somehow as a retirement plan participation. Long-term care contracts are going to be expanded. Simple and SEP, those are two different types of plans. Roth contributions are going to be available. And then matching and non-elective contributions will be treated or can be treated as Roth contributions. So it appears even the government, I guess on the one hand, they don't like the wealthy, people like Peter Thiel, who amassed $5 billion in Roth IRA funds. They don't like that. You know, don't do that now. You'll be, you know, facing the long arm of the law, I guess, if you actually use the tax code to benefit yourself. But on the other hand, they're saying, hey, bring the Roth money, right? And of course, I think we know why, right? Why would the government seemingly prefer Roth contributions, Dan? What's the big wrinkle there? Where nobody's getting a deduction, right? So, you know, you've got more taxes coming into the Treasury, but for some reason they don't like it if you overexceed or you excel like a Peter Thiel or a Mitt Romney. You know, Romney had hundreds of millions in his, I believe it was Roth IRA. Let's see. Let's look at things that are expiring, if there's anything we haven't already touched on.
You know, one significant thing about the Secure that I would, or it is the, you know, raising the age to age 75, they phase it in over, I think it is, 2 or 3 years. R&D requirement, required minimum distribution age to 75.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot to put that on the list, but that, you know, again, for people that are adequately funded in their retirement, that sure gives them a chance to do some planning to avoid you know, the high tax brackets that a lot of retired people find themselves in due to the RMDs. It's not that people that go into retirement pay less tax necessarily. I know a lot of my clients think that that's what's going to happen. They're not worried about taxes in their retirement, and it ought to be just the reverse. I mean, go look at the RMDs, how they go up, as you get older, and then look at the average life expectancy. You know, it's 85 to 86 now for males. It's 87, 88 for females. And look at what those denominators turn into as you move towards that age. And if you don't think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket, it can only be because either you're unaware or you've already got your Roth conversion handled and you're not worried about it, right? It's a big deal. Dan, let's pivot and talk about the syndication opportunity that we took a look at this week. And, again, this is a 506B transaction. It is only available if you've already connected with the syndicator. You can't just walk up now because the capital raise is underway. And the other thing that matters is that this is offered through one of the old school travel agent, quote unquote, investor platforms that you have to be a member of to participate. It's exclusive. And so for those of you that are contemplating such a move, which we do encourage if you're not accredited, and without going off into the weeds here on details, if you don't have at least $1 million in net worth, you're going to be limited to 506B type offerings or transactions. So this one would qualify for you if you were a member of the organization. And so one thing to consider. But Dan, where is this property located?
It's up in North Texas, okay. Dallas area.
Great. And how many units is it?
Do you want to get specific with that?
No, just ballpark's fine.
A little over 200.
Okay, great. And it would be a Class A, if I recall?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, this is a Class A, actually.
Okay. And what's the significant opportunity math look like? What type of... I'm not sure. I know we had some financial details. We're still lacking some of the deal documents, but generally speaking, what type of cash on cash do you recall right offhand?
Yeah, they're looking at a 5% early. It talks about quarterly distributions because it is already a well-operated, well-oiled machine, it looks like, going into it, just, you know, taking over and adding a little value just by doing some, it was built, I think it is 2001 or so. So it's 20 years old. So it's got a little dated on the interiors and such. They're doing some extensive there. But, you know, one of the things I think are really optimistic is like a 34% increase over this 3-year time, you know, getting rents up 34%. I mean, that's, rather large increase, I think, over a 3-year in this market. But we've seen some really high rental rate increases just simply because of inflation, if nothing else. But 34%, that's a lot.
That's a heavy lift. And I was just trying to remember, what's the rehab outlay look like compared to the purchase price? What percent?
Its outlay is only about $2 million out of it's about 5% of, you know, what they're buying it for. They're getting another $2.5 million they're putting into it.
Yeah.
Rehab.
And the, let's see, I was just trying to look how generally the property's physical condition
were assessed.
Yeah, roofs are not old, good condition, few small repairs. So I'm not sure where the 34% in rent increases would come from unless the property is truly that far under market, which I'm always suspicious when I see that being posited as one of the reasons to undertake the transaction. I mean, I I'm always of a mind that, look, unless the seller, and maybe there's some distress here. I mean, as we know, making money in real estate typically occurs because of one of two things, either a distressed property or a distressed situation. And I didn't see the situation described as being distressed. And
yeah, it's got some great financing on it. It's got a less than 5%, call it somewhat permanent loan, because it is with one of the big equity guys. So yeah. It's a good loan. It's assumable.
10 year.
Yeah.
And but it is a floating rate. They've got a cap in place. So, you know, the loan cap does transfer with the loan. So I'm not sure, again, we're always trying to understand the math. And when you tell us, we assume that there's room to make the rents go higher because that's generally the driver to get net operating income higher. I mean, you know, I don't see many people that come in and cut expenses by 34%, just as an example. And so, you know, anytime I see rental increases more than 5 or 10% a year, actually 5, I would say, I tend to take a jaundiced view and try to figure out, okay, well, what's special? What do these guys know that the current owner doesn't know? Why wouldn't the current owner be raising rental rates if they were under market? And, you know, if this were a mom and pop scenario on the current owner, I might understand that, but I don't believe that's what we're dealing with here. And I don't know, I can't remember, Dan, since I haven't gotten into this as much as you, is the current owner a professional organization or is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Not a mom and pop.
Right. So again, everybody thinks they see an angle and they may, I'll never forget, you know, there's so many ways of looking at any financial opportunity where you see something and somebody else sees something else. And the ability for someone to see the vision of what something looks like after it's been repositioned, let's say, is the magic. That's the magic sauce, if you will, on how money gets made. And, you know, some people see a beat-up old Class C apartment as a dump, and then others of our clients that invest in these things see the upgraded NOI that results from higher rents and the ability to refinance and or sell. And there's a lot of money to be made, particularly in the older properties that a lot of people just driving down the street won't even notice. Now, this one's not that, though. And to take a Class A, what's being positioned or portrayed as a Class A, which, again, it's a 20-year-old property, so in the true sense of the definition, it's not really a Class A, but I guess they're somehow going to reposition it, at least in terms of the rent levels, and seek to move the NOI up accordingly, in which case 3 to 5 years down the road, they'll either sell or refinance.
Yeah, they do allow a 7% vacancy on this. That, I think that's maybe significant, but they're still using a 1.5% cap rate, which I think is really optimistic too in 3 years.
So the exit is a half point higher or half percent higher than what they're buying it at?
0.2. 4.3, they're buying. 4.5, they're out.
So. Yeah, that's well, who's to say that it can't happen? But I'll tell you this, if you, as I've done, if you'll look at the sensitivity on even a full 1% difference where the cap rate has gone up, and you're going to find that, you know, there's a big difference in the amount of cash that comes out to the passive. So, you know, yeah, and I've looked at it as high as a 3% difference because I, and you know what we are doing is already looks like it's headed that direction because you've got people that are buying at 4, and now we're seeing deals that are portraying a 7% on the way out, and that's a huge difference in cash flow versus assuming 4.5 or 4.8. where you're exiting, and so you know you can't just put your.
I was talking to a man this week about appraisals and such, and you know he does a lot of work with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and he said they've had one deal this month to come in to work, and I mean the Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae is dried up, so to speak, and he was talking about as high as even a 6% cap rate on the multifamily work. So it's
starting to be considered more and more. And I'm going to tell you something. You know, there's I'm familiar with one platform, one investor platform here in Houston, that ostensibly is about your wealth, so I think you might understand who I'm referring to. And the head of that platform is on record, this is on the air, as questioning, why in the world won't you just go ahead and invest without looking at the private placement memorandum, looking at the operating agreement? In other words, looking at the information being provided by the syndicator as to how they think they're going to generate the returns that you're signing up for. Why do you need to know that? You just need to move forward and invest. That's what he said, literally on the air. And I just don't understand that mindset, you know, and I question, is that how he got to where he's at, assuming he's actually done the transactions he says, which it begs the question if this has been his modus operandi. And I'm just telling you, it's all about the math. And if you don't believe me, go out and Google real estate math and see what pops up. You'll see there's a recent book that just came on the market from the Bigger Pockets group, who a lot of these mentor platforms promote and suggest that you participate in. And in fact, the gentleman that I just referenced is a poster out on a Bigger Pockets. So they just brought a book out basically saying that real estate is a math game. Well, I agree. And one thing I wanted to mention as we're headed to the end here, I had the good fortune this week, yesterday, one of my longtime friends from way back in the 80s took me down to see a little slice of Americana. And I know for you guys that live out in Richmond and Wharton in that area, you probably are thinking, gee, Nathan, surely you've known that that area was true Americana. But I had the good fortune of visiting with his parents, and his dad's in his 90s. His mom is I'm going to say the youthful part of the equation. I think she's sub-90. And Jim and Lillian are longtime listeners of the show. Jim is a former math professor. He's all about the math, and it just made me realize every time we turn around, we get confirmation of that. And let me tell you, a guy like Jim that grew up in the Depression era, he understands math when it comes to finances better than any of us young folk will ever have the chance to do. And I tell you, it's always refreshing to see people that figured out the math pretty much just bumping along, saving their pennies, saving their dimes and quarters. And it was really had a great 30 minutes or so visiting with them, and it just kind of gives you a confirmation that, hey, we are on the right path. We are looking at the math. And for those of you that join platforms where they just act like, oh, they're all successful, that's just a bunch of hooey. And we know there's differences between the ones that make it to the finish line and the ones that don't. We try to help you assess that on the front end with pro forma data. Yes, it's all pro forma. But at least you start off with one that has a chance. Dan, we're coming to the end of the show here real quick. I'm going to thank you again for attending, and we look forward to next week, 7 a.m. right here on AM 700. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.